Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, Wikipedia for data. What are the laws that govern databases in the European Union and the US? And how do they enable or stifle research and innovation? Joining me to discuss this is Julia Schetze, master's student in contemporary European studies with a concentration on tech policy, and she's also working at Wikimedia Germany. Julia, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
So before we jump in, I'd just like to point out that in our 100th episode, where we celebrated our 100 episodes, Baron and I talked about how Europeans often sit around a room and talk about how to regulate American tech companies without any Americans in the room. And then we proceeded to record a podcast where two Americans sat in a room and talked about Europe without asking any Europeans what their opinions were. So just kudos to me for getting an actual European on the show to talk about European issues and not just speculating on what you guys actually think.
Well, thanks for opening up your horizon that way.
Of course. Happy to. So Julia, before we jump into this topic, tell us about Wikipedia for data.
Wikipedia for data is called Wikidata, and it's being developed right now in Berlin at the Wikimedia Germany offices. We are the chapter which is concentrating on the German community behind Wikipedia, behind all the Wikimedia projects, and our mother organization is in San Francisco, the Wikimedia Foundation. And Wikidata is basically a database which has structured data which humans and computers can read. So community members can put in data which is public domain because our license is CC0. So it needs to be public domain. It can be used by for non-commercial purposes, but also for commercial purposes. A point which I'll get back to later, which is a little bit troublesome with some of the laws which exist in the EU right now.
And what kind of data go into this database? I mean, I'm sure there's a large variety because you're basically opening it up for anyone with data to put it in and help facilitate research. But what are some examples of data that are in the database and how are people using them?
So the first move was helping the Wikipedia community update some of the data points. So for example, maybe the article on the English Wikipedia about New York and the population of New York will be updated all the time. But in other languages, that might not be the case. So by using Wikidata, we can ensure that you only have to do one edit on Wikidata, which is linked to all the Wikipedias, and then you have even in the Czech version of Wikipedia, you have the same population in the New York article, like in the English Wikipedia. So that was one thing.
That's actually really interesting, though, because I bet a lot of people wonder when they're using Wikipedia, who the hell has the time to update all of these articles in all of these different languages? And it seems like Wikidata is a way of actually automating that process and making it so that, you know, it's easy to wonder, how does Wikipedia work? I mean, there's so much information. It's not like anyone's getting paid a lot of money to do this. So how does it work?
It's all voluntary.
And that's pretty interesting that Wikidata serves as basically a direct link to Wikipedia and that the data you put into Wikidata then will automatically update a lot of the articles. And that might also allay a lot of the fears that people have that Wikipedia is not a reliable source for good facts and numbers that you then have to confirm them elsewhere. But if the data are coming from, you know, government databases and things like that, that's a lot more comforting and kind of gives Wikipedia more clout as a source for factual information.
Yes, definitely. So there are two more points you mentioned just now. So language is obviously a good thing. With Wikidata, you have the opportunity to translate the data as well. So you have if you have a concept like the United States, like Congress, you can translate it into the other languages. But then also what you just mentioned, because our goal is obviously to spread free knowledge further than just on the Western Hemisphere. So if you have very small languages, we also have a tool which my friend Lucy built, the article placeholder. So if there's not an article about the United States Congress in a small language, Nepal, for example, you can see the data, at least like the data points, and appoint it to, hey, just write this article with the data which is available, which is also pretty neat.
I mean, so this sounds all wonderful, and obviously we're only 5 minutes into the show, so we're clearly going to get to some problems, but I mean, at least what we covered so far, it sounds like essentially this. You've got like Wikidata. It's a database that any person, whether it's my own data, it's government data that's publicly available, whatever, it's a consensual relationship between the person who puts in the data and the platform. And then anything that's in the platform can be used for either commercial or non-commercial purposes. So this all sounds so great. Where do the problems arise, and and what laws are they related to?
Yeah, so some of the problems which can appear is, we work with some institutions which are happy to give us some of the data. For example, we have a Wiki Median in Residence, we call them, at who do the TED Talks, and he puts in some of the data. But generally, EU law on databases can be very deterring in the sense that it's a very complicated law, and some of our community members, for example, don't know, can you extract some of the contents which will be facts from a database? And that's because if you look at the EU Database Directive, which was implemented in 1996, it was supposed to help and promote the production of databases, but it made also some things more complicated. So it's similar to the US law in the way that you just have a copyright on like the creative selection and arrangement of databases. But on top of that, you also have a sui generis right, which prevents unauthorized extraction of the contents of a database, which you guys don't have in the US. So you had a law case, FICE Publications versus Wool Telephone Services, which basically prevented copyright on facts. And the EU basically did a little, like, made copyright on facts available in the way that you cannot extract a significant amount of data points. And I completely understand if you have a copyright on like a selection and the way the database is made, but on the points in general, the value is, like, especially on open data, is that you take some of the data from one database and connect it to another database, or make a whole new database, and you get like new information out of that.
So there's a key distinction here. So in the United States, it is perfectly fine if you want to copyright some unique value of your database. So you could be grabbing public information from all over the place, but maybe the way that you arrange it, the conclusions you draw, those things are protected by copyright. But you can't just take one line item in your database that happens to be a fact and just say this is copyrighted, because that would lead to some pretty basic problems where other people who want to use facts to come up with databases are now running up against copyright problems in the European Union. That's a really interesting distinction. So is it safe to say that it is easier to build a database in the United States than in the European Union because of this law?
It's really difficult to come up with proof to say it's actually easier. So right now, my research is basically just looking into, could this have an impact? And what I'm relying on right now is on our community members telling us about their experience with database law. And we have two cases right now. One is one of my favorite projects, which uses Wikidata. It's called Histopedia, and they build a timeline. It's a social enterprise, so they use it commercially, but not the timeline itself is you have to pay for. They license out their software. So it's also a unique new business model dealing with data and software. And you can basically create a timeline with information from Wikidata, Wikipedia, and Wikimedia Commons. And you can use it for educational purposes, for any of these kind of things. So for them, obviously, it would be great to have more data in Wikidata. So you can then create timelines about maybe meteorological data, some business data, scientists, like all these databases. And for them, it's complicated to know sometimes even if these databases have a license. And sometimes the businesses also might not know that it's difficult to get.
And just to kind of illustrate how some of these tools work for listeners, because I saw like a little demonstration of how this works. Essentially, you're dealing with the fact that Wikipedia has articles that are all over the place, right? And there are plenty of connections you could draw between topics. I mean, if we're talking about ideologies, right? Let's just say something like, you know, libertarianism, since we're here at Tech Freedom, we like to think of ourselves as libertarian. What other ideologies does this connect to? And sure, on the right side of a Wikipedia page, you can click around, but that requires you to statically view one article at a time or have multiple tabs open. Whereas some of these tools that gather the data from Wikipedia can visualize it in really cool ways with flowcharts and timelines, just like you say, and you can run into some problems there. Now, one interesting issue that came out of the EU database directive is this 15-year thing. So why was the number 15 years selected, and what exactly do you get for 15 years when you build a database? It's some type of protection, right?
Yeah, so you get the sui generis is basically for 15 years, but
What does that mean? Does that mean that no one else can use your database for 15 years unless they pay you?
The content, yeah. So you so this is another thing. The sui generis is mostly about like the extraction of the content, but an insubstantial part of the content you can take, but it's not actually, I mean, you have databases which are huge, like how are you going to put a number on insubstantial part? So that's difficult. So
and is that handled by courts, I guess? Like who decides what's a significant amount of data versus an insignificant amount as it relates to the size of the database? I mean, who makes that call? That seems like a really hard thing to interpret.
Yeah, this is exactly the point. So right now, I'm not sure like who's going to make that point. I think this would be a case-by-case basis, which is obviously very complicated. And if you're a volunteer, you might not have the time and energy to go through every single, I would like have this information out of it. Can I put it into Wikidata or can I not? So that's one of the points. Like we really want to try to make it easier for people to extract parts of the data.
And even if you wait the 15 years, that's not necessarily enough. Like, so let's say you're a young researcher, you're your age, or like 25, and you wait until you're 40 years old all this time just to use this data. That's not even necessarily enough because you can get another 15 years of protection by doing what?
By it says you have to make another substantial investment. And the investment can be either human, financial, or technical, which is also very iffy.
So let me just get this straight. I can create a database, right? And now I have 15 years where no one else can use the content without paying me. And then all I need to do is like hire another person and say that this person is now going to somehow be involved in this project. And that's, if you're a small organization, that could be a substantial investment. And now I get another 15 years of protection. And just to put this into some context, the commercial internet as it interacts with the consumer is about 20 years old. So when you talk about 15 years, I mean, do we even know what the hell databases are going to look like in 15 years? Is this discussion going to be made irrelevant? I guess that's one of the major problems here, where because you're setting such a long timeline, you're really, I guess, constraining the potential for the data. On the other hand, if you can pay for this stuff, why don't people just pay up? I mean, is it really that big of a deal to just pay for the content that you need?
I'm not sure if a paid model would be the best, but in general, I think you're right that it should be made easier to extract data in general. And 15 years is also, you know, the data we want is the data we need right now. And it might be outdated. So even if you can then visualize historical data and some researchers will be happy with that. But I think what Wikidata does well is, for example, if the Panama Papers came out, one of the people who use Wikidata just made a visualization of all the occupations of persons who are mentioned in the Panama paper. And that was all over the news. And that was a great use of the software.
Yeah, listeners might remember that when the Panama Papers came out, it became very clear that a significant portion of the people who had accounts with this, I guess, firm in Panama were politicians. And that was really interesting because there was a big debate about taxes and whether people were paying taxes. But my biggest takeaway from the Panama Papers was that politicians were basically looting their country's treasuries and then hiding the money in Panama, which is a political problem, not necessarily a tax problem. But there's one interesting example where people at home might not even have realized that that finding was a direct result of Wikidata. Now, we've talked about the problem with 15 years and whether content can be copyrighted, as seems to be the case in the EU, which is not the case in the USA. Is there a particular project that you want to do that you can basically say is being held up by this regulation, or are there things that you can imagine that are basically made impossible by this rule? Because I guess people's biggest question is going to be, what is the big deal? What is being stifled? What innovation is not happening as a result of what you're saying is a rigid rule?
So another project one of our community members is working on is a biomedical database, which is being created with Wikidata right now. And I talked to the researchers there, and I find it really interesting because the EU is actually coming out with quite progressive innovations and policies around open data in general. So they just came out last week saying that the new norm in the Horizon 2020 funding will be open data. So any publicly funded project through the Horizon 2020 funding will have to be open, which is great. And they're arguing that this will help citizen science and also bring facts closer to the people. But what it's not necessarily doing is opening up any of the other databases. So the biomedical researchers who are working with Wikidata right now, they need data from other projects which might not be funded from the Horizon 2020 funding. So they were talking about one case where they approached an institute and they wanted to include it in the wikis, and they knew it has had a license, and also sometimes the license is just also very difficult to find out.
So sometimes it's hard to find out who owns the data. So even if you're willing to pay, you can't even find out who you have to pay.
Not even with paying, but just in general, are you allowed to use this data or are you not?
Sometimes it's unclear.
Yeah, because sometimes I think people who have databases might not know what their actual license is. But then also, I mean, people want to use it. The license is not necessarily published right away.
Yeah, and you might actually have built a database since 1996. I'm sure many people have built databases and are unaware that they're even protected.
Yeah,
and that they have to take a proactive step in releasing it. So you could call someone up and say, hey, we really want to use your data. And they're like, yeah, go ahead. And you're like, yes. Yeah, but you actually have to do something. And they're like, what do you mean I have to do something? I don't even know about this law.
Yes.
So I guess that maybe there's an argument to be made that you should have to opt in to the protection rather than the protection being automatic, because then the people who don't care would be automatically opting out. And then, you know, people who are not concerned about necessarily getting paid or having the license will then just allow their data to be used and they wouldn't have known otherwise.
Yes, that's the exact case which was which the biomedical researchers told me about. They went to the institute, talked how they will use it. And mostly it is actually used for scientific purposes. So then the institute was like, okay, yeah, fine, you can include it in Wikidata.
So where's the opposition? I mean, we've obviously talked about some of the benefits of open data, you know, allowing kind of the same as benefits of open source operating systems like Android, where like anyone can put apps into the Play Store, whereas Apple is a different model where they exert a lot of control over what goes into the Apple App Store. There's obviously a lot of benefits to open data. More information is out there. It's easier to draw conclusions. Big data has benefits for public health and technology and innovation. There has to be some kind of concern and downside, right, that's motivating the opposition to open data. Is it that content creators are worried that they're not going to get paid? Is it the same type of arguments you see from like Hollywood about copyright protection, illegal downloads, piracy? I mean, is that essentially the rub here, is that creative people who create databases are worried that others are going to steal their work or use it and make a profit and the original creator is not going to get anything? I'm just trying to understand where the opposition is, since there seem to be many reasons to change it.
Yeah, I think it's mostly big businesses who collect data as part of another service they provide. And I totally understand that as well. So I think this is like we are playing with the exact idea with the opt-in rather than like opt-out mechanism. Since the database directive was not really on the table for a long time, it's hard to see the opposition right now. And the European Commission did actually its own research in 2005 to figure out if their goal of the production of databases actually was achieved, and it didn't. But mostly, you know, the people they asked about the database directive were well, big businesses instead of civil society and startups. And
the real challenge for someone like in your position is to kind of prove a hypothetical or prove a negative.
Yeah.
So if the goal for the EU in the database directive was to spur the creation of databases, all they really have to do is point to a bunch of databases and say, look, mission accomplished. But your task is to say it could have been better, or better things could have happened with the data, or somehow you've robbed people of an entire section of innovation because of the way you structured your law. And that's always tough because you're dealing with counterfactuals. What if we had done something different? How could things have been if we had done things differently? That's a challenge.
Exactly,
whereas, yeah, they're just dealing with, look, we've got a bunch of databases, we're done.
Exactly. So if you're a startup and listening and you want to do something with open data and use Wikidata and you have a problem with licensing or copyright, then please email me.
Well, there's your plug.
That would be great.
And we'll make sure to get that email to everyone in the show notes or somewhere else. But any parting thoughts? Are there certain things you would recommend other than the opt-in, opt-out problem, which seems like a simple fix, even though it might have big ramifications? Would you suggest that maybe the EU adopt America's approach to this problem? I mean, where do you see this issue going?
Well, I think, yeah, there are many different options. I think generally it would be easier to incorporate it into a normal copyright and just get rid of the sui generis. Then, yeah, you have the opt-in approach. It's a very unsexy topic to explain.
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of making it sexy, and just the thinking of it as Wikipedia for data makes it a little bit simpler to understand. But essentially, one way that you just suggested would be to just apply whatever regime you apply to normal copyright, whether we're talking about a news article or an op-ed you've written or whatever, that same regime apply to databases, rather than what the EU has done, has kind of created a separate silo and said databases are in this category and then everything else is in this other category. And we talk about a lot on this show and at Tech Freedom about tech neutral regulation, and the internet being a global entity kind of breaks down all these barriers, and regulators are still stuck in these like silos where it's like, okay, databases are over here, so you're going to have this sui generis right and you're going to have 15 years and blah, blah, blah. But then copyright is something different. And does it make sense to have these different regulations if the technology is all part of the same ecosystem?
Yes, for sure. And also, I mean, with the copyright, the thing also between like the difference between Wikipedia and Wikidata in general is Wikimedia as a nonprofit has the opportunity to collaborate, for example, with universities and get access, give some Wikipedians access to books which would be normally like closed for them, so they can go and read them and then write about it and reference it. And you can do referencing in Wikidata as well, but you can't necessarily write about the data points. You know, it's a totally different thing in that sense as well.
And in terms of a takeaway for the average listener who might not really care about this or doesn't work on databases, maybe think about it this way. If your tax dollars funded a study in some way, do you want that data to be available to for other use? Do you feel that the public should have access to it? Here, there are some real issues with what, you know, listeners might not be aware of where their money's going, what it's funding, and if there are restrictions being placed on what can be done with that research further. So there are certainly a lot of implications for big data, for public health, and while this may sound like kind of a dull topic, I assure you it's important. So that's it for today's show. My guest has been Julia Schütze, a master's student in contemporary European studies with a concentration on tech policy, and she's also a tech communications strategist at Wikimedia Germany. Julia, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Send us an email at Media Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think of the show. Pitch topics and guests, or even if that guest is yourself. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.